Hey, my name is Elizabeth Banks. And I feel cautiously optimistic about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Who else was cautiously optimistic?
Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama said cautiously optimistic.
No way. Yeah. I had the same answer as Michelle Obama.
But then she changed it later to pessimist.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, a podcast that features not just me, but two lovely companions. I meant that. Sonam Ofsesyan, assistant I hired in 2009, I believe.
Yeah.
And at the time you did you work in the travel department at NBC?
I worked in the publicity department, in events and operations.
That's right.
I did a lot of their fun parties and stuff. That was, I saw you at a party years before I worked for you.
Yep. Yeah, all the best parties I ever went to were NBC parties. Always a melting peacock ice sculpture. And the cast of Wings. Anyway, and Matt Gourley, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I think I'm doing okay.
Nice.
I am I'm drinking, I don't know why, recently I just started, switched over. I had this bad habit of I drink a lot of diet soda.
Oh.
People have been telling me that's not good for you. So I switched over to iced green tea.
Hmm.
And I think I'm going to live an extra day and that's it. I am of that mind because my wife is very much, she's so naturally healthy.
Yeah.
And I'm quite fatalistic about it. I mean, that might be an sort of an Irish quality, but I just think, you go and you go. And so all this, I think I could eat all kinds of healthy stuff and drink all kinds of healthy stuff, which I do, but I don't think it's going to change things
much.
It's
a tough call, right? Because you want to prolong your life, but you also want to enjoy your life. So where do you draw the line?
Well, I would like to be a burden on my children.
Okay, that's
so all we have. I want to do that thing where I become very old very quickly. And then I have to, I'm just a huge pain in the ass.
Okay.
I feel like after a while, people will just leave you in your wheelchair, just like in the corner. Yeah. I'm sorry, I was just checking. That's a lot of caffeine.
Is it?
Isn't it?
Well, green tea has less caffeine than coffee.
I know, yeah. But the amount he's drinking.
I do, but you know what? Caffeine does not affect me.
Are you sure?
Yes. This is a fact, and you can check this.
Would I check this fact?
I know. How would we know if it affects
you? My wife.
You
could ask my wife. I will drink coffee at night and then go to sleep.
I've had
massive doses of coffee and then gone right to sleep, and they say that it's a gene. They say it's a red-haired thing, but I need tons of anesthetic to put me down.
Really?
Yeah. No, they have to hit me with like 7 rhino darts when I go to the dentist if they just want to put drill a new cavity. Because they're always saying, okay, that's enough. And then they start to put the drill in, and I go, die! And they say, really? More? And I go, And then they come in, and sometimes I've seen as many as like 7 people come in with different syringes.
It's because you're so caffeinated.
I know. They're all jabbing at my head. And then finally, they get this this crazy cobra to settle down and they work on my chompies, which is what I call my teeth.
Really?
Crazy cobra.
Yeah. Crazy cobra and the chompies?
And the chompies. That's my band. I'm crazy. It's crazy cobra and the chompies tonight at the Odeon Theater.
Is it true, the redheaded thing? And
I've heard that.
Really?
Yes.
Sounds
and
reliable.
I've heard it from doctors. I actually heard it from an anesthetician that they think that there is a link to the red hair gene and a tolerance for all kinds of anesthetics.
Was this anesthetologist redheaded?
Yeah.
No.
Is being redheaded, and I'm not saying this to be mean, is it an abnormality? Like, is there something about your genetic structure that is—
Are you a freak?
Weird and not proper.
Well, I wouldn't recommend it. How about that? Because it usually means you have very fair skin, which I do.
Yeah.
Which means I'm really— especially these days, with the amount of light coming from the sun that permeates our damaged atmosphere. Yeah, I'm doomed I'm doomed.
No,
and,
but I,
and we are, but it's a very strange gene. Like
yeah.
my brothers and sisters are not, we're not redheads. And when I look at these pictures of me as a little kid and my hair was even brighter. It was like a carrot red.
It's like a glitch. It's like having webbed feet.
Well, I do have webbed feet. You know that, right?
When I said it,
Eduardo.
When I said
under the
it,
table, because yeah, I think it's a little disgusting.
I didn't. I remember you saying this when I said it. I didn't know that you did, but
oh,
yeah.
Oh, this is like when I showed my back. Oh God, look
yeah,
at that.
Yeah, that's a yes. My third and fourth toe. There's webbing in between it.
Did she like, I don't know, was she drinking?
Well, she was drinking plutonium in the second and third trimester.
You're like the Waterworld guy. You're like a mariner. You can swim faster.
He's evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'm more highly evolved because I have webbing on one of my feet between yeah, the third and fourth toe. You know what's a drag for me?
Swimming?
No.
The sun?
I'm quite a good swimmer. No, what's a drag for me is if I wanted, and I don't, but I was in an REI once, and I love REI, and I say that all the time, but it's like my happy place. I love to look at all the different gear. And I went over to the boot section to check everything out, and they had those kind of cool things that you put on your feet, and it's like a rubbery glove that goes on your feet that allows your foot to move more naturally, and they're designed in such a way so that each toe slides in.
You're calling
in.
Those cool?
The toe shoes.
The toe shoes.
Yeah,
the
you dodged that, a bullet.
Yeah.
Hold on. This person was telling me all the advantages of them. This is a very sad moment in my life. This woman was saying, oh, they're really, it's great for this and great for that. And I said, well, you know, I'll try one on. So she went and she started to slide it on my foot. And because of my webbing, it stopped. And she kept pushing. And she said, what's wrong? I can't get this on. And I was like, And then she took it off and she went, Monster! Monster!
Rhino darts!
Yeah, I mean, it was just my webbing.
Yeah.
Now, I know that I don't really think those are cool, but you know when you can't have something, you only want it more?
Yeah.
So the other day, I'm walking along, and I see this guy strolling in those same feet gloves, and he's strolling along, and I'm enraged
really?
That I can't have that.
Oh, yeah. You dodged a bullet. Those shoes would give me toe claustrophobia. I couldn't put those on.
Toe claustrophobia.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to say. I have heard those shoes are better, but I also think your abnormalities.
Stop. What are you, why are you?
Which are.
Stop saying
like your freckles too probably aren't. I'm saying there are normal people and then there's abnormal people with abnormal qualities.
What's sad about freckles. What's sad about freckles? You're not trying. You're not trying at all.
I'm being scientific about this. It's not normal to be a redhead.
I'm like 2 minutes from being chased into a tower.
Yeah.
That's then set afire
yeah,
by an angry mid-century mob.
Yeah.
What's sad about freckles is that it's a terrible idea, but its evolution was thinking, we got to help this guy out a little bit. Let's give him a little bit of skin tone in tiny splotches here and there all over his body. And I'm just keep thinking about wherever the assembly line is, wherever dimension the assembly line is, they're like, oh, he has no melanin. He's just the whitest thing we've ever seen. Give him some protection. What do you mean? Splatter him with a little bit. Okay. Okay, we did. It doesn't look right. Hey, change his hair to a carroty orange. How's that? Does that help? Not really. I've got it. Grab his left foot and create a duck-like webbing between his third and fourth toe.
Should we do both feet?
No.
Oh, okay.
What are you, stupid?
Sorry.
Just the left. Good. I think he's ready to go. Hey, I know. One last thing. Load him up with self-hate. And pull the lever. Here he goes. Where did he land? band in that family where everyone's yelling.
Hey, my grandpa was a redheaded fellow, and I have very fond memories of him, and I think you're a fine-looking, distinguished gentleman.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
What the fuck? What the fuck? Well, listen. I'm the asshole now.
Oh. You are.
I'm the asshole.
Well, you know what you did.
I'm saying scientifically, these things are not given to everybody else. You're saying in the assembly line, they're like, oh, fix it. I think in the assembly line, they were like, let's fuck this one up.
She's saying you're abnormal scientifically.
I'm just saying.
Let's fuck this one up? Who on the assembly line ever says that? What Keebler elf ever? What technician at Ford or Chrysler or BMW ever said, let's fuck this one up?
Let's make him really tall and skinny, too.
Let's get him really long feet
and
make him super tall.
There's a reason a lot of people aren't redheads. I'm just saying.
What's the reason?
Because it's not normal.
Well,
sorry.
No, I'm good.
I love you. You know I love you.
I know you love me.
Yes,
the way Cher loved the boy in Mask.
Rocky Dennis.
Yeah, sure. Sure, I'll throw in a Rocky Dennis reference anytime. Thanks a lot, Sona. I love you too. And I'm going to go out and fit myself for a bag that goes on my head. All right, let's get into it. My guest today is an actress, producer, and director. You know her from such films as Wet Hot American Summer, Pitch Perfect, and The Hunger Games. Her new movie, which she directed, I love this title, is called Cocaine Bear. It is out right now. Awesome title. I'm thrilled she's here today. Elizabeth Banks, welcome. Thrilled to have you here on the podcast.
That's a strong word.
I am thrilled.
Aww.
I'm going to say that because a number of reasons. Always admired you and think you're incredibly cool, but we also became friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You and your man, me and my lady.
I'm in it for the wife. That's the only reason I'm friends with you.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that.
What's your saying, Sona?
My favorite thing about Conan is Liza.
Yeah.
But by the way, I remember talking to someone, Liz, is like 10 years ago now. And they were like, you know, I liked you when I met you. And then I met your husband and I liked you more. And I thought, I think that's a compliment.
I'm not sure.
I think. Yeah. I don't know if it is. But it made me feel confident that I chose well.
You chose very well.
Right? Like he can hang out. He's nice.
Are you kidding?
He's a delight.
He's really smart, cool.
Yeah.
And we've hung out a bunch of times in situations where we're on vacation, we bump into each other.
Yeah.
And let's just say a skiing kind of place.
Yes.
And you're with your family, I'm with my family, and we end up hanging out. And I remember very clearly you inviting us over for charades.
Yeah.
One night and
running charades.
You were running it. Yeah.
It's called running charades.
What do you
the
mean?
The game is not just simple charades. It's running charades. Like you have teams in different parts of the house.
Okay. All right.
You have to run to get your clues and then go give them.
That's right. We were all in separate parts of this house. And it divided us into teams. And then we had to run. And there'd be, I don't know what you'd call this person, the wizard or the game master.
The giver.
The giver.
The giver.
Was on these back stairs and would say what the clue is, and then you'd have to run back to your team. And here's what I learned that night. You're one of the most competitive people I've ever met in my life. Elizabeth Banks is terrifying. You're a terrifying person.
Truly, no one who actually knows me would disagree with that statement.
And what's great is that you were really determined to win. And I kept thinking, this is fun. But then you'd win and you'd be like, in your face, we won.
You're not wrong that I don't. I'm not a gentle winner.
Where does that come from? Because we have some things in common. We both come from Massachusetts.
Yep.
Obviously, I'm 70 years older than you, but you come from Pittsfield, Mass.
Yes.
And, large Irish Catholic family.
That's right.
I come from Brookline, Mass.
That's one of the things we've bonded over over time. Yeah.
So how did you turn out cooler than
me? I'm not.
You actually are.
You are, though.
Yeah, you kind of kill
it. Well, half my family is also gingers. And so that's another thing I like about you. You remind me of home in all the best ways. But I didn't get the ginger. So I think that's part of it. Like, I didn't have to grow up worrying daily about like being made fun of.
Oh, okay.
Now it's good. Like, nobody gets made fun. First of all, you're not allowed to make fun of people now. I don't know if you know about that.
I know.
Like, that's not allowed anymore.
Right. Can't do it.
It's keep kind in mind at all times. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what we're trying
I think making fun of people is going to come back and going to come back strong. And I'll be ready.
There's
going to
be whisper campaigns.
You want it to come back, but didn't people make fun of you?
Why would you say that?
You you were awkwardly tall, had really long legs. You were like 40 pounds.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. I was mocked and abused, but in the best ways.
What? I mean, I had a great bully, like a really good bully. She was excellent. She was good at her job of the bully thing. And frankly, like, what a great.
She was a professional bully.
Pretty much. Right. So I had to walk, like, I know this is very tropey, but I did walk through the woods, over rivers, the whole thing to go to school. Mm-hmm. And after school, those woods became like the bully zone. You know, like if you were walking home afterwards and you didn't want to smoke cigarettes with the guys who hung out on their like dirt bikes, you just got bullied by them.
So I don't understand. Bullies in the woods is a whole different thing. I remembered encountering bullies over near Stevens Market at the Point, not far from our house.
One of the packies.
Exactly. But what I'm just imagining walking through beautiful woods.
Yes.
In this nice part of Massachusetts, this rural part of Massachusetts. And then you just, a bully steps out behind a tree.
That's literally what it was like. That's literally what it was like. So, but the great news is that I stood up to my bully in like fifth or sixth grade. Must have been sixth. I was in middle school. Uh-huh. North middle school. That's all we had. It's north, south. You went to, I lived off of North Street. This is North middle school. And she was pushing her friends into me in the line, you know, in the lineup to go back in. From lunch, or we didn't have a recess, I don't think, in sixth grade, maybe. Anyway, I finally just had it. And I turned around and I pushed her back and she fell to the ground in front of everyone. And it was super embarrassing for her. And I was like, I'm a superhero. Like, I mean, I've never felt the adrenaline of like the whole thing and like, I've defeated my boat, you know? And the best part was I happened to be chewing gum, which is not allowed. And so I didn't get in trouble for pushing the ground. No one saw because there was like a whole group that like circled around us, you know, at the moment. And then one of her friends like pulled her up and everyone was just in shock that I fought back.
Yeah.
And then, and so I turned around like chewing my gum with my adrenaline running.
Yeah.
And the like monitor at the door was like, you, Elizabeth, gum. And was like, you have detention. And the worst thing at that moment I could get was detention because the bullies all got detention. And so then you had to walk home the 30 minutes later. There was no one in the woods to save you if you were alone in the woods with the bully. I had to go with the pack.
Yeah.
So I remember I went to the detention person, I don't know, and was like, I can't stay after school. Like, I'm being bullied by this person. I can't say their name because I don't want to get them in trouble because I'm not a narc. All I was doing was chewing gum. Can I do it? Like, I'll do extra homework, like anything, but I cannot walk home alone 30 minutes after school ends. And I don't know. They took pity on me and I did not actually have to serve detention. And so I got away with everything that day. And I was like, I felt pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know what's
I think that's what it is. I think you have to fight back a little bit with the bullies.
There's a quote you have that I saw that I thought is really fascinating, which is you, I think I'm getting this right, but you said you feel like you're a character actor that's trapped in a leading lady's body. And I thought that's so true you're stunning. You're stunningly attractive. No, seriously.
You are beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you should just, you're beautiful.
We're not being nice. we're sort of just like stunned. And I feel that way every time I run into you. It's crazy to act like it's a contradiction at all, but your comedy chops are so crazy good that to have both and then also to have all these other ambitions that you have, I think is it's unusual.
It didn't used to be. I think about like the old movie stars of, you know, the Greta Garbos and like the Mae Wests of the world. Like they were so cute. And like, even like Katharine Hepburn and Audrey Hepburn, they got to, yes, they were like leading ladies. I mean, Audrey Hepburn probably more than the rest of that list, but they were like, you know, Joan Crawford was like a broad, you know, like she really got Rosalind Russell, like Auntie Mame was like my favorite thing growing up. Like I was like, I just want to be Auntie Mame. And that's what's always appealed to me, you know, the just people who really got to chew up the scenery and like do physical comedy as well as, I don't know, do everything. And then there became like these ingenues who were just like damsels in distress. And I've played a lot of those, my like girlfriends, the girl, you know, there's not much to do. Just kind of like be in the movie with the guy, like, you know.
Well, it's so funny because
it's just not really, I don't know.
When I saw you in 40-Year-Old Virgin, obviously you were, you know, crazy attractive popping on the screen, but also the way you were playing it was so funny in a different way that I hadn't quite seen before.
Aww.
Did you know? And I remember thinking, she's so funny in this way. I haven't seen anyone else quite do this.
It could have been a character that was just kind of there, but then it just became like a really funny character because of how you did
so
it.
So much fun doing that.
Yeah.
Beth.
With the, I think, a little thong sticking out.
I did add a thong too.
Not that I remember.
Yeah, you really remember that.
I was escorted out of that movie four times.
You kept coming back in?
Yeah, I kept coming in and saying, it's my right! Weird.
I have not seen that movie in a long time, but you know who did was my friend's kid, who's 13.
Oh, wow.
He's like, so he had a bar mitzvah and then he watched The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Yes. And I was like, I'm like literally his like auntie.
And now he'd like to speak with you, if possible.
I was like, what were you thinking? He's like, I kind of forgot about that part. Like, really?
Also, you have, I mean, in the comedy world, like people like Paul Rudd, you've really clicked with him.
I've worked with Paul like six times or something. Now, maybe like four or five. A bunch.
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, he never calls me.
Well, that's Rudd. He's just busy, how he is.
Just busy being Ant-Man.
Don't belittle.
He's belittled.
He is.
That's how
he really is.
That's the whole point of it, Conan.
His whole power is that he is belittled. You're right. You're right. How dare you belittle Ant-Man? Paul, wherever you are, we're sorry. So tell me about how you, because I'm curious about just getting the arc here. I know that you.
The arc.
I'm trying to, this is what I.
I know, I like
I'm trying
it.
To find because.
You're doing a timeline of my life. I know where you.
Okay, I understand where you come from.
Yes, you and, better
and
than most.
I understand that Irish Catholic thing. It's so funny that when you said that you were chewing gum, my mom, who's a wonderful woman, great mom, but she had this almost Victorian Irish Catholic division when it came to the boys and the girls. So she had this thing where my brothers and I could fuck up in any way.
Oh,
and she'd be like, oh, those boys. And if one of my sisters chewed gum, she was like, you spit that gum out. You know what you look like? A tramp!
Yeah, constantly.
And, like, and we'd be in the corner. I'd have like 9 sticks of gum in my mouth. Yeah. She wouldn't say anything to me.
No. Yeah.
She'd say, like, oh, he's a good little boy. Let's hope that hair changes color. And then she'd whip around and my nice sisters would come in there and go, hello, mother. You!
Yeah.
Spit that out.
I remember I wanted to get my ears pierced and my parents were like, you're going to look like a pirate. Okay. Is that bad? I don't even know if that's bad.
It was so strange.
Only pirates have their ears. What? I don't think that's true.
No. But also, we're talking about like the 70s for me and like 80s for you. And it's just like this, I don't know, it's this crazy time.
No, it was.
I think it's just how my family was like that. They let Danny get away with anything. And then with me, it was totally different. So the rules are different.
In Armenian culture, it's the same thing, which is Danny's the boy, so he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, but I didn't know Irish families were like that too.
Right.
But oh my God. Yeah. My uncle, my mom is one of seven. There's six girls and a boy. Oh. My uncle, who I love, love you, Uncle Ricky, who I think's met Conan. He like got kicked out of schools and kicked out of high school and he's on the hockey team. He's lost all of his front teeth. Like he's like, you know, plays a super ultra fun. Like went to Harvard. Like, do you know what I mean? No one cares. Like they just get away with whatever they want.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know? It's the way it should be.
It's the way it should be.
Yeah. I think so. I think it builds character.
I thought we were complaining about it. You were saying that's how we should.
I know. And then I realized, what am I sticking up for my sisters for?
Just
I love
very
that
very deserving, but like girls always had to, I always felt like the girls had to work like twice as hard, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And also I think about the picture of me in my little virginal white, you know, first communion dress. And it's like, that's how they want to picture you all the time when you're little.
I wore the same dress at my communion. I'm wondering what that was all about. I remember being scared of communion. You
communion
know,
or confession?
What's that?
Confession was terrifying.
Yeah, confession's terrifying because you'd go in there and I would always freeze up and just make up things because I'm not going to say what I'm really doing. I would.
No kid says what they're really doing.
No kid says, you don't go in there and go like, well, anyway, I touched myself. You don't say that to a priest.
No.
God.
Meanwhile, they're psyched if they hear that.
Though. Yeah. But you know, it's so weird. Like you don't see the priest. There's just like this silhouette.
But you lie? Don't you feel guilty lying?
Well, you say, and I lied. And then you get forgiven. So it doesn't fucking matter.
Is that how you ended every confession? And then something else. And then, hey, it doesn't fucking matter anyway. Does it, Padre? Chomp, chomp. My dear, are you chewing gum? You fucking bet I'm chewing gum.
I remember going, sitting in the pew and going, this, I was in high school and our friend, his name is Gordy. He goes in. And, you know, we all would make a pact. Like, I mean, you're not going to tell him this. We're not telling him we're having, you know, sex or anything. And it's like, no, of course not. So it's like, yeah, like you go in, you'd be like, I, you know, I took the Lord's name in vain and I fought with my parents and I lied and da-da-da and I cheated on a math test, whatever. And then, you know, and you just kind of like, fine, you'd be like, five Hail Marys. Okay, great, right? That was very typically how it went. So Gordy's in there. And all of a sudden, we hear like the priest kind of start like raising his voice, which never happens.
Right.
And then Gordy kind of comes out bright red, won't look us in the eye, like goes up to the front, kneels down and start doing what, you know, is normally five Hail Marys. So we're all like, what the heck just happened with Gordy? You know? Yeah. So we go in, I go in, da, da. So then we've all gone up, we've all done our prayers, our little penance. We're all standing out front for like half an hour. It's getting dark. Gordy's still up there. And to this day, I still am like,
you don't know what he
what
did?
What the hell did he tell me?
But he had to say like 700,000 Hail Marys.
I would think it was like, you might go to hell for this. Like,
oh you know, my God. Like,
you know what's Gordy?
Poor Gordy. I don't know what
he
did.
We got to find out. We're going to get
it
some people on this.
It probably wasn't even anything.
Gordy in Cola, Pittsfield, Mass.
But whatever Gordy said.
You know what's crazy?
Gosh.
When you think about it now, it's such a weird thing we all just accepted that you say to the priest, I did this. I stole, you know, I ate a piece of chocolate cake when I wasn't supposed to. Yep. I took the extra Pop-Tart. I used the Lord's name in vain. And then it's like going to an auto body guy and he gives you an estimate.
Yeah.
He's like, right off the top of his head, that's six Hail Marys, three exactly. Our Fathers.
Maybe do a rosary.
Do a rosary, you know, whatever. And you just like he can hear it. Like one of those people that can guess your weight.
Yeah.
162. Wow. You nailed it.
And if you get a second opinion, it's probably like fewer Hail Marys.
You know what they should have had is another confessional where you could say, you know what?
Let me get another rate.
I'm going to get another rate.
I want to know if I can do it in three Hail Marys. Can I get into heaven with just three?
But I really did. I lied and just would say things like and they were almost biblical. I envied, coveted.
You had to covet
my neighbor's wife.
Something.
It's like, how old are you? 11?
Exactly.
I lay with the sheep. You did what? It's all biblical nonsense.
Such, I know. Anyway. Organized religion.
Yeah.
There it was.
So I want to ask you about, because it feels to me like in your career, I mean, I loved you on 30 Rock. And I think that was supposed to be just I mean, it wasn't planned to be a recurring role.
No.
And then you came on as Jack Donaghy's yes, lady.
Love interest.
At love interest. And how quickly did you know, oh, this is going places?
Well, I went in for, I had two episodes, I think, was the initial like offer. Like, come in, do a little quick thing, two episodes. I was playing, you know, this Fox News type newscaster. Mm-hmm. And then like a month or so later, it was like, hey, did you like doing that? You want to come back and do this with us? Sure. And then it was like 3 years later and suddenly I was pregnant with this baby and we were getting married.
That's nice.
So it's pretty nice.
And
I really enjoyed working on that show. Loved it.
And then of course, Pitch Perfect is where it felt like things really ramp up in a great way because you get more control. You get to move closer into a different role.
Well, my husband and I, who have a company together, Brownstone Productions, we produced Pitch Perfect, all three of those, and I directed the second one. And, you know, it was my first foray into doing, making more of my Hollywood life, I guess, and just acting and hanging out by the phone waiting for somebody to call.
But you know, it's occurring to me now, I'm remembering that Lucille Ball, you see photos of her in the 1940s? Stunning. I mean,
gorgeous.
Like you, a leading lady.
Yeah. But definitely a character. Like she's someone, that's who I should have named when I was naming those.
Right. But
you know what? Can we edit that?
No, we can't afford that.
Make sure
there's no money for that.
I didn't mean to say Audrey Hepburn. Fuck Audrey Hepburn. I meant to say Lucille Ball.
Someone went after Audrey Hepburn.
I went to say Lucille Ball is.
But you know, when you see, you know, people think of her as Lucy and wah, and the you know, and you see pictures of her in the 40s, and she's just drop dead, supermodel, gorgeous, and then to have those kind of comedy chops. But then she and her husband take over. They figure out a way to own the factory. And
I think they had the largest deal at CBS like that had ever happened at that point.
Yeah.
At some point. I think like now Ryan Murphy has one of those or Shonda Rhimes has a bigger one.
Right.
day that would have been Lucy and Desi's.
Yeah. But also I don't think it had been done before.
No.
I don't think anybody had done that.
I mean,
taken control, you know,
of the whole thing.
Yeah. And I think that there used to be just a different attitude. I mean, obviously in the 20s and 30s and 40s, like shut up and act. Don't worry your pretty little head about it.
Yeah.
We'll take care of this. And so.
And suddenly they were like, no, 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 you can't do any of it without us. We own the whole thing. Yeah, it was amazing. They were incredible. They were incredible at business too.
Yeah.
Something to truly strive for. Yeah. Lucy.
Well, I wanted to talk to you because the last time, this was a very funny thing. I was talking to you. I saw you around Christmas time. Liza and I see you and we're hanging out. We get dinner. And this really happened. I'm telling you about this trailer that I saw online.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who, if something grabs me, it really grabs me and I can't stop thinking about it. And I watched this trailer and then I watched it again and again and I was showing it to my kids. And it's the trailer that had gone viral called Cocaine Bear.
Oh, yeah.
So I am talking to you and I go like, oh man, this thing, Cocaine Bear. And you went, yeah. And I went, oh man, I see that. And you went, You do know that that's my movie. And I didn't know. No. And I was talking to you about Cocaine Bear.
You were.
And it was so, I mean,
it's
true
story.
I felt like an idiot, but also what's nice about it is you could tell my enthusiasm was genuine.
Real, yeah.
It was real. I was like, oh my God, because I thought this is the best title for a movie since Pootie Tang. Like, it's one of the best titles for a movie.
It's an amazing title.
Ever. And I just, because all you need to hear is Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
But then I see the trailer and I was like, oh, gee. And like everyone else who saw the trailer, like, what the?
It's a big like, what? They made, that's real?
They made this?
They allowed people to make a movie called that?
And then I was very excited because they said, hey, Elizabeth Banks is coming on the podcast, which I was very excited about. And they said, you can check out Cocaine Bear if you want. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And they were like, yeah, no, we'll give you a link and you can watch it. So Liza and I watched it and I had a blast. We
Thank
had an absolute
you.
Blast. And there are so many sequences there. I mean, there are so many sequences in the movie that I kind of want to watch a few more times. And I don't want to give anything away, but...
We do. We tuck a few things into it that I hope make people want to see it twice. Like, go like, wait, what was that line that she said again? Yeah. What was that thing that she did?
And you know what's it's fantastic is... All you need to know is it's Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
my only disappointment is at the end, the bear doesn't become like a producer. That would have been a really good ending. He's a very
he's on the lot.
He's on the lot. He's a very, and he's still doing a like, ton of cocaine.
Totally.
And it's occasionally attacking like a tour van. But other than that, but what was really nice about it was I think the combination. The peanut butter and jelly sandwich that is scary and funny is probably almost impossible to pull off. And you pulled it off. It is scary and funny.
Thank you. Yeah. That was the challenge of it, right? Like that was the tone and the script that I thought, oh, if I get this right, I think it can hit. But it's a fine line to walk for sure.
Because there are moments where there are times where truly... The bear is doing something absolutely terrible to somebody and I'm howling.
Yeah.
I'm laughing and also shrieking at the same time. And you don't want to hear me laugh and shriek at the same time. I won't. No, you don't. You don't. It's really good that I saw this.
I'm glad you had that reaction because I've only seen it with audiences, you know, and seeing it with audiences, it's pretty intense because, you'll have couples having completely different reactions sitting right next to each other. Like some that are just like, and others that are laughing like in the same moment, you know, which is very fun to see.
Yeah. All I'll say is there's a whole scene that involves EMTs and an ambulance and it plays out and I'm just like, and it goes on for a while and it just keeps ratcheting up to the point where I think this can't get
crazier.
And then it doubles.
Yeah.
And the other thing I really liked about it is and we've talked about this before, we won't name names, but there are movies famously that star kids.
Yeah.
That, and I'll say it's so tricky because a lot of times I watch movies with kids and I don't like the kids.
Yeah.
And I'm in general, I like children.
Oh,
I really
you do. Oh, that's good. Okay.
I mean, I root for them because that's the future of the species.
It's very controversial.
I don't want to spend time with them, but I'm told my own children are lovely and I will meet them one day. But, the girl and the boy who are central to it are great. And the boy is, I think, a real find. He just gets a lot more screen time.
Yeah.
But he's a real find. And I liked him.
Yeah, he has some great lines. He is for sure an audience favorite. Yeah. I think putting kids into adult scenarios too, like truly adult scenarios, is always, to me, can be very funny.
Right.
And the movie's really about, I really love making movies about underdogs generally. Mm-hmm. And I like multiple POV. I've made three films now. They all are like, you know, many characters. I've never just followed, you know, Jack Reacher or something. I don't know. So the notion that we could find like kids to put into this scenario, I was like, well, you're never going to have a bigger underdog than like anybody meeting a bear that they don't know is high in cocaine, right? Like, I don't care if you are Jack Reacher. You are an underdog in that scenario.
Also, I just love, it was so funny to me how much the bear enjoys cocaine. He really likes it. And then once he gets a taste for it, you know, God help you if you have some cocaine in your back pocket.
Yeah.
And it's all based on a real story,
which
I didn't know.
Yeah, and frankly, partially based on this notion. So in real life, let's just say, the real life bear OD'd big time on the cocaine, right? So it
clear- Which is a good message to get out to those kids.
Yeah.
But I think the movie is not pro-drug, by the way. The movie is very much like, drugs is bad.
Yes, it is. It is.
So I feel like I stayed true to my, you know, to we're keeping it clean for the kids in that regard. But the real bear truly obviously loved that. I mean, could not stop eating it to the point where it's like the necropsy on the bear, was like its heart exploded. Every organ inside of its body.
The bear itself became a good poster child for don't do drugs.
Correct. Yeah. It really did. But I remember when I read that story, which is about this drug runner, Andrew Thornton, who opens our film, dropping these drugs out of this airplane. And then he ends up in a whole other scenario. Right. But basically, that this bear was like collateral damage this, you know, bizarre drug run scenario and the war on drugs and And I remember feeling deep sympathy for this bear. Like, what the fuck? Like this, that's so. And so when I read this script, I thought, well, this is the revenge story for the bear.
Yeah, like, the bear didn't ask for this.
The bear didn't want it.
The bear didn't
that.
Call his dealer.
No.
And say, get over here.
The bear was like, I mean, you put these drugs right in front of me. I tasted them. They made me excited. I needed more, you know? And though, so now in the movie, we just imagine, well, what if that bear ran into a bunch of people?
You know what's, and I don't think I'm giving anything away when I say, it's and you learn this in the movie, but I thought it was a really cool distinction that there's a real distinction between brown bears and black bears.
Yeah.
And black bears are thought to be much less worrisome.
Yeah.
And
they are. They truly are.
Yeah,
like this, we shouldn't create, I don't want to create like Jaws here. Like, I don't want everyone to be like, I can't be, you can see a black bear.
Yeah.
And not totally lose your mind. I mean, don't go close to a wild animal. Do I really have to say that out loud on the podcast?
But, and maybe don't give it like, a lot of cocaine.
Don't give it cocaine.
No, so, but it was, what I, there's a thing in the movie where people make assumptions about this black bear because black bears are supposed to be pretty harmless and they don't know the, what's the backstory. They don't know what this, what's in this bear system. So they're like, ah, oh, don't worry about it. And
bears are friendly.
Yeah. So,
That's one of my, that's Jesse Tyler Ferguson's character is like a PETA bear expert, right? Like he loves animals. He calls them friends. He doesn't.
He's really funny. And you know what? When he first came on camera, I didn't recognize him.
I know. Thank you.
And then Liz is the one that said, oh my God. And I was laughing and thinking, oh, this guy's terrific. Because he looks quite different.
Yes.
And then Liza said, that's Jesse. That's Jesse Tyler Ferguson. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. He's great.
He's so great. We've been old friends. I made one of my, I think my second movie ever I made with Jesse. In Vermont in the late 90s. And he actually played an anti-gay priest or like seminary student or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is obviously clearly not his life since he's married to a man with children.
He changed a lot.
He saw, I don't know. Yeah.
He saw the light.
It was really a testament to his acting skills.
Yeah.
Conan, because he really played that up.
How excited were you when it's Christmas time and the trailer hits and people were freaking out and it's blowing up? Is that a fun experience?
Well, I mean,
I would think it would have to be.
You go like, oh, thank God. You know, you just are so relieved. I would say I was relieved more than anything. And I don't know. I also, though, I'm like, I still has to translate into people buying tickets and putting their butt in the seat. And I don't know if that, I don't know what's happening in the world anymore.
Well, it's a crazy time.
Yeah.
There's giant tectonic shifts happening all around us that we can't control.
Yeah.
But I think you've got a really good head start with Cocaine Bear. Yeah.
Well, I'm very glad that you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And just the two of you snuggled up in your house.
There was no snuggling. Liza called a halt to that years ago.
Well, it was very fun to make. And I'm happy that that the pieces of it that are in the world so far are being well received, of course. But we'll see. It's like your baby. Like you just are like, I was, you know, a wreck of nerves when we put the trailer out.
Is this because it's funny, you've achieved so much and in different ways, but just talking to you, I can feel that you're tough and you're tough on yourself. Probably tougher on yourself than anybody.
I mean, I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do also, I'm in my mind, I'm like, you give yourself grace, which I am trying to do too, more of like give myself grace, because I do think the guilt and pressure of being a working mom too is like, it's real, unfortunately, in our society. Mm-hmm. And so I'm truly bringing myself a sense of, it's okay. I really enjoy getting to collaborate and make things with people. It's really fun. I love entertaining people. I love making people laugh. And if I get to do that. It's like, it's a privilege. It's an honor. It's all the things that it is. It's also really hard work. And it also always takes me away from other things I also like to do, like going to my kid's basketball game, you know? And so just making sure, I don't call it balance because I think that's, but.
There is no balance. When people say.
What is that?
There is no balance.
I don't know what that means. I mean, I just am, in other words, I'm just trying to be the best version of myself. So that's being creative, doing the collaboration, having fun with what I'm doing, like, you know, taking advantage of the relationships I've made along the way, you know, and hopefully grow, planting seeds that can grow later so that this can keep going, you know, like that's what I think about, like the big picture stuff. But at the end of the day, I also am just trying when it isn't great, because sometimes it's not great, or I'll have a bad day or and by the way, when I watch Cocaine Bear, I'm like, oof. There's still things I'm like, God damn it, why did I cut that line? Or, oh, I should have cut that. Like, it's still not exactly right. But I like the idea that there's, at some point, pencils down. And you just go like, well, I did the best I could do with the time and money that I had and the resources and the people and the da-da-da. And that's the grace.
I don't want to talk to an artist who says, no, I nailed it.
I mean,
and nothing
who,
can be changed. No, that's not that's not the way it is. You can always hear something or see something.
Totally.
I want to bring up quickly Ray Liotta, who's one of my all-time favorites. And this must have been, was this the very last thing that he worked on?
I'm not 100% sure, so yeah. I don't know. He went to the Dominican Republic where he passed away to do another project, and I don't know how much he'd actually shot of that before he passed, but.
I got to know him a bit just over the years interviewing him and, I mean, obviously, you get to know him from Goodfellas, and that's such an iconic role. And then when you talk to him, and he's just shrugging and being self-effacing, you can't handle it because you think, no.
You know, I think it's okay to say this. I went to like a memorial for him after he passed away, and I thought what was so sweet about it was that the guys that were there, like his best friends, were like from high school in Jersey.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're like, they're just the guys that he's always known that know him as like kind of sweet and, you know.
It's Ray.
Yeah. And like, he had a dream and he was and he thought he was going to go to Hollywood and like, they're all still like, and he did it, you know? And he was like, I'm doing it. Like, it just this beautiful sense that he kind of really appreciated it and knew where he was from and loved doing it and all of those things. I think that loved him.
It says a lot about people that have that kind of success and they're still good friends with people they knew in high school, college, grade school.
Yeah.
I've cut all those people out. Oh. They had to go.
What? Why? You were just, as soon as you went on TV, you were like, well.
Hey, what's the point? I had to cut them loose. You know, can't have those guys hanging around.
But you just said it says a lot about someone.
Oh,
that
no,
still,
it does. Oh, I'm a terrible person.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood what you were saying. Okay.
I can't hang out with those Brookline creeps.
Brookline.
Do you go back a lot? Do you go back to Massachusetts?
Not as much as I want to. I just got a suite at the Garden.
Nice.
For Madonna.
Nice.
I'm very excited. Yeah. So I will go back. I'm going to bring all my cousins, you know, the love, all that. I have so much. My sisters, my other sisters.
How many sisters?
Well, I'm the oldest of four.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't have that big of a family.
Right.
But my mom is from 7 and my dad's from 8. Oof. So I have a lot of cousins. I have a lot of first cousins.
Right.
And then we're going to have a blast. I'm taking them all to the suite. At the Garden.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for inviting me. I'll be there as well.
Oh, I didn't hear the invitation.
I don't know if you are you a Madonna fan? I mean, I feel like I'd get down to some Madonna, old school hits.
You know, it was never in my wheelhouse. Uh-huh. I think that's fair to say.
You're more like a Springsteen guy, right? That's your vibe.
Springsteen. I love Bruce Springsteen. It just wasn't during the. I'm gonna say I didn't go whole hog on the Madonna phenomenon when it was happening. I appreciated it.
Yeah.
And I think she was a great showman
Yeah,
she's a show person.
Yeah, and she certainly killed it and did a, you know, so, but it's just not quite in my
wheelhouse. Like me and my gals, we're going to lose our minds. You know, it does like the soundtrack to our youth. Mm-hmm. We did Like a Virgin and Holiday and, you know, the whole Like a Prayer and the whole thing.
Yeah, see,
thing.
I was too old for that. Yeah, and, yeah. And
that was like, we
thing.
Did like dance routines to it and we had to do the moves. You know, this was MTV. She was like on the videos and we all dressed
her.
We wore
huge.
All the, you know, the bracelets, the rubber bracelets. I mean, you know, we worshipped her. So
yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that for sure is I'll be home in the summer and I'll be seeing Madonna.
How often
do you go back?
I go back whenever I can. My parents still live there.
Yeah.
Most of my family lives within like 30 minutes of where I grew up.
Yeah.
So I go back every chance I can get. And then walk around and just remember the old days. I go to Duncan.
Of course.
I walk by the football field where I had no involvement in football.
I was wondering where that was going.
I go to the old baseball field where I had no involvement in baseball.
You reminisce about not doing sports?
Yeah, I reminisce about being in my room studying. That's the room I studied in. Uh-huh. And then what happened? Then I took a nap and then studied some more. They're not good stories.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I had a few scrapes in my day. I was a real rapscallion.
Yes.
Well, the movie is Cocaine Bear. I want to make sure when does this drop?
The movie will be out when this episode drops.
It's okay. Out. It's yeah. out now?
Yeah.
We're pretending it's out now?
That's right. This comes out the Monday right after the release.
Ooh.
Oh, great. Right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, Cocaine Bear is out now.
Yeah.
And congratulations. And thank you for letting me hang out with you and your family occasionally.
Thank you for hanging out.
You up my cool factor.
Yeah, and my
which
kids
is quite an accomplishment.
Are like, who's that tall guy?
Yeah. Who's that tall lady hanging around?
It's wild. They don't, you know, they don't have any, like, they don't want late night TV. They don't have any, you know, there's no notion of that right now for them. Whereas when we were growing up, it was like Johnny Carson and SNL and the whole, of course, you had to do the whole thing.
If it's okay, I'll come over to the house and Blay, you'll come with me and we'll load up a bunch of like best of Conan stuff on a computer. Oh, I need your kids.
They're going to start getting into it.
We're going to, all I need is about 6 hours with your kids and some energy drinks.
And then that'll be.
And a large screen. And
then they'll start worshiping you. They love the Simpsons.
There you go.
So but we literally were like, he wrote on the Simpsons. And they were like, okay.
Right.
Now we're sort of into it.
He was an accountant on the Simpsons. He sort of worked on the books.
I was going to say, because you said that you're going to take Blay to her house, you can just email YouTube clips and stuff.
I need to be there and I need to be gesturing to a screen going, see? Now wait for it. And then kapowie! What do you think, guys? What? Pay attention!
They're like 11. They'll be like, all right.
They just start,
is it on TikTok?
They start crying. All right, load up the next one.
You're bringing Blay.
Yeah.
Why?
Blay, bring up the next one.
Why?
He's the AV guy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You got to do AV up the next one.
Here it comes. Another remote of you delivering food.
Yeah.
Chinese food delivery. Here it comes.
You think a guy who delivers Chinese food, right? You've seen them, right? Hey, where are you going? Pay the fuck attention. Mom.
Who is the guy who lived under the stairs? Who lived under the...
Letterman. That was Chris Elliott.
Right. Yeah. Chris Elliott.
See, that's why I need to be there to educate them.
Right.
I don't want them. See, if I let you do it.
Oops. Showing them Letterman.
Yeah.
Oops.
If I let you do it, you'll be like, oh, I showed them all the classic Letterman. And the kids will be like, man, that Letterman's so sharp, so good. And I'll be just, he's the best. But I'm coming over. Blay.
I'm there, dude.
We're gonna put them on a. We're gonna have it transferred to like 16mm and show it on a. All right, now coming up next, you see, this is 1998, Conan. Now you see my face fill out a bit. Anyway, such a joy having you here. Thank you so much. Congratulations on everything, and and especially Cocaine Bear, and give my best to your old man.
All right, you give my best to Liza.
I call her my old lady.
I call her your better half.
So does everybody. Thank you. I think everybody does this. I was driving into work today and I had the radio on and Neil Diamond's song came on, Forever in Blue Jeans. Oh, you know that one? Yeah. Money talks, but it don't sing and dance and it don't walk. Forever in Blue Jeans. And I remember, you know, when you hear a song, it takes you right back to that moment in time. I remembered it was time to go to school and my clock radio went on. This would be in the 1970s, whenever that song was a hit. And I'm up in the attic of my parents' house because that's where they made me live. Really?
Like flowers in the attic? You're just forgotten really? Child?
And it was really, they would throw a roast up there every now and then. But I was living at the end of the hall in the attic and it was really cold up there. I remember that. Like put your feet on the floor and it was really cold. And I don't know why, because heat's supposed to rise, but for some reason in our house, it didn't. And anyway, I can still picture the clock radio. It was a gift from my Uncle Gavin, who is my godfather. And the clock radio came on. Neil Diamond's song came on and I was listening to it. It was a big hit at the time. And I thought that the song was called Reverend Blue Jeans. And so for years, I was like, it's Reverend Blue Jeans. Dun, 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 dun. And then it wasn't till years later that someone said to me, oh, I love that song Forever in Blue Jeans. And I just got really quiet because I knew that I'd been living a lie. And then I realized there were so many times, and I think this is maybe peculiar to me. I know a lot of people do this, but the song Dirty Deeds and They're Done Dirt Cheap.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I used to sing it as Dirty Deeds and They're Dundergy, which doesn't even make nothing. I just thought, oh, they're Australian.
Oh,
I just thought, oh, these Aussies, they're probably like, it's Dirty Deeds, you know, oh, it's a Dundergy, you know? And so there's a Roo and there's a Dundergy. And
it does sound like a didgeridoo and a wallaby mixed up.
Wallaby, didgeridoo, yeah. You know, shrimp on the bobby, Dundergy. And so I remembered singing it really loudly in the back of our family station wagon and going, and they're dirty deeds and they're done dirt cheap. And my brother Luke was like, what the fuck is your problem? It's done dirt cheap. And again, I was humiliated, but so I started thinking about these today on the way over, which is just how I would, I remember, I swear to God, Van Morrison's famous song, Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah.
There's that part where he says, and I swear to God, I wasn't even trying to be funny, but when I first heard that song, and I didn't know what the dirty implication was, but I used to sing, because he says that part where, hey, there we go, days when the rain changed, you know, and then he gets to the part where he says, going down the old mine with a transistor radio, like go down into the old mine with a transistor radio is what we used to do and listen to music. I thought it was, and I'm not, people are going to say, oh, you're making this up. I'm not making it up. I honestly thought it was going down on an old man for a transistor radio.
When I was a kid,
I loved that song and I'd be like, going down on an old man for a transistor radio. And I didn't know what going down meant. I just, you know, it's, first of all, you can't fucking understand Van Morrison.
Oh, that just conjures the whole scenario.
I know. And then later on, when I start to figure out what that means, I'm like, that better be a really good transistor radio.
That. He's just sitting on a park bench going, hey, blue boy, you like music?
You like music? Oh, sure, and I do. God. I like music. I want to. Do you like
subterranean environment?
Well, how much do you like music there, lad? But I honestly did used to sing. And now just in defiance, because that song comes on all yeah. the time. When that song comes on, when it gets to that part, I belt
you
out,
should.
Going down on an old man for a transistor radio.
Do you remember that song?
I mean, things are tough. And I mean, we're talking about Belfast. That's where he yeah. grew up.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was hard to procure a good transistor radio.
You did what you could.
And if old man McGinty had one, you do what you got
to
do.
And yeah. what if the kid like got it because he wanted to give it to his parents for a Christmas gift or something, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. There's a sweet story.
But then it's like that, there's that O. Henry twist,
yeah.
which is the gift they got him.
Was a blowjob.
Is that you never have to give a blowjob to an old man. A certificate that says you never have to do that. And that's how he got them the transistor radio.
Do you remember that old song that goes, I might like you better if we slept together?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought it was, my mother'd get better if we slept together.
Hey, that's a line I used to use a lot in the 80s. My mother's ill, but she might improve if we were to have sexual relations. Never worked. I think there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us do it. We mishear things. And
I think I get 90% of the lyrics I sing.
Is this because we learned in a previous segment that you have perfect hearing and that?
No. I'm saying I don't hear the lyrics properly. Oh. I think I am the opposite of what a musician, of who a musician wants to listen to their music, because I don't really listen to the lyrics that much. Mike, I just listen.
When
to
I was
the
at
song.
Saturday Night Live, Mike Myers told me that he thought ELO's hit song, "The Evil Woman,"
yeah.
was medieval.
I've
woman.
Thought that too. And,
but
yeah.
I think that's a very common.
There's
one.
A few of those. Like
no but, one else thought it was "Dirty Deeds" and their Dundergy.
No.
And no one in the history of the world thought this kid is blowing an old man to get a transistor radio in yeah. Belfast.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, when I get it wrong, I really get it wrong.
Yeah. That's. I mean, it's almost an art what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I am the Joyce of my time.
Just some woman named Joyce.
Just a woman named Joyce. She's her carpool night is Thursday. Is Thursdays. I don't know. Yeah. Not that Joyce.
No.
Oh, for God's sake, not that Joyce. All right. Apologies to everyone who will never hear Brown Eyed Girl the same way again.
You guys tell your dungarees you love them.
Dundergees.
Dundergees.
It's
whatever.
Dundergees. Peace out.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.